So this was a bit of a surprise for me. I had been preparing for Ishwar Puri's presentation next week, but I actually accept this as an incredible mercy to be able to talk about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I have read this, and I hope you all get this book, the Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhava, because it is the most compelling book that will enlighten you about how strictly Srila Prabhupada has followed everything from Bhakti Siddhanta. So if you haven't read it, this is a must read for every devotee. So I'm going to just go through reading bits of his life in chronological order. And Rabindranath wants to, we're aiming for 8:30 to start the Abhishek. So I have a watch, but I don't, it's very small. So if somebody sees that it's getting to be close to 8:30, maybe we'll stop there. I will also read some very interesting and exciting stories from, if we get that, if we get enough time, of the devotees and the relationship between Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples and him. Okay, so the content of what I'm going to read in parts are from the Raya Vishnu. It's a story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So on the fifth day of the dark lunar fortnight of the month of Govinda, which corresponds to February 6th in 1874 AD by our Western calendar, at 3:30 in the afternoon, Bimala Prasad Datta, which is what he was called, later to be known as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, made his appearance in Purushottam Kshetra, which is known as Jagannath Puri, in the state of Orissa, not far from the temple of Lord Jagannath. He was the fourth son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Sri Yukta Bhagavati Devi, and at the time of his birth, all 32 bodily symptoms of a Mahapurusha, a great personality, were pointed out by an experienced astrologer. Furthermore, the boy was born with his umbilical cord wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin's thread. The astrologer commented at his birth, "I have done many horoscopes in my life, but I have never before seen such a horoscope filled with all the signs of a great personality. This child will become world famous as a brilliant teacher of life's ultimate goal." When Bhaktisiddhanta was 6 months old, Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra festival was in procession, and the cart stopped in front of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house for 3 days. Following the instructions of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhagavati Devi, his wife, brought the child before the cart and offered garland fell from the neck of Lord Jagannath that encircled the boy. This was taken as a sign of special favor by all the people who were present. The grain ceremony was observed on the cart at this time and was done with Jagannath Prasad. When the boy's vocational inclination was tested, he immediately embraced the Srimad Bhagavatam, indicating his future as a preacher. Most of you may know, but when typically we do this ceremony still here in the Hare Krishna movement, that when a child is 6 months old, I know we did this for our most recent grandchild, Abai, that they have their first grain ceremony, which involves placing a little several objects in front of the baby, the child, money in one pile or jewels or something shiny, sacred books. And I noticed in this particular ceremony of my grandson, Rabindranath displayed a bow and an arrow, which I'd never seen before, and which was very cool. And then they choose. They can hardly walk, but whatever they grab at becomes an omen or a sign. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he chose sacred text, which was the indication that he would be a future preacher. So therefore, from the very beginning of his appearance, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati exhibited all the signs of an exalted eternal associate of the Lord, who had descended in answer to Srila Bhaktivinoda's prayer, his prayer for a ray of Vishnu to help him spread the Krishna consciousness movement. In those days, it was very, very, very unknown. What we're doing now, the vision, the way, the style that we do Krishna consciousness was just being crafted. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he needed help. And so he prayed for someone to come and help. Later, he recognizes that it's Bhaktisiddhanta, one of his sons, that becomes, that is the one he actually recognizes. So although family lineage may be ultimately relevant when considering the appearance of an eternally liberated associate of the Lord, still it's interesting to see what sort of family is blessed with such a transcendental personality. As history shows us, Lord Brahma himself appeared in the family of Muslims as Srila Haridas Thakur, and there are other instances of exalted persons taking birth in humble families. Still, it's a point of interest to hear a little bit about the lineage of Bhaktisiddhanta. Interesting to note, of course, he comes in bloodline from, traces back to Lord Brahma with from the descendants of Chitragupta, and they are known as the Brahma Kayastas. Bharata is an 87th generation from Chitragupta. Bharadvaja is the 88th. And after him comes Angira, and after him appeared Brihaspati. In the 149th generation of descendants, Purushottam, son of Shiva Datta, went to Bengal upon the summons of the king of Bengal, Adisura. Purushottam's youngest son took sannyas and became famous as Kanaka Dandi. In the 15th generation from Purushottam, Raja Krishnananda, the king of Keturi in Bengal, and the father of Srila Narottam Das Thakur, the great Vaishnava Acharya that we sing so many of his songs of in our songbook. They're written by one of Bhaktisiddhanta's blood relative. I actually didn't know that till I started to research that for this presentation. So he's got a really good lineage. Raja Krishnananda, the father of Narottam Das Thakur, also a great devotee, was personally favored in the association of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is sitting on our altar. The seventh generation from Raja Krishnananda saw the appearance of Madan Mohan Datta, who was very famous in Bengal and Calcutta for his spiritual qualities. His great-grandson was Ananda Chandra Datta, and his son was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose fourth son was Bimala Prasad. The name Bimala or Sri Bimala Devi refers to the Parasakti or internal potency of Lord Jagannath. So his name literally means the mercy of the internal potency of the Lord. So fascinating. He's this really, really special person. So it's interesting to note that he's descending in a bloodline from various great Vaishnava Acharyas and Lord Nityananda. I think that's just really powerful. So Bimala Prasad, he stayed in Jagannath Puri for 10 months after his appearance, and then he journeyed to Bengal by palanquin on his mother's lap. For those of you who don't know what a palanquin is, that was kind of an ancient, sort of a two people in the front, two people in the back, you know, you're sitting in a chair and they're carrying you, not a bicycle, not a rickshaw, not a car, but carrying you in this way. So as a baby, he was carried in a palanquin on his mother's lap. He grew up in his early years in Ranagat in the district of Nadia, hearing about Krishna from his mother. I was interested to learn in the Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava that in the home where Bhaktisiddhanta grew up, his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, did not allow anything but words about Krishna to be spoken. So Sri Bhaktisiddhanta, from the time he was a baby, never heard anything but Krishna Katha. In a house full of 13 children, plus servants, plus probably a million other people coming in and out with milk and grains and vegetables. And this was the law of the house. That was the quality of his upbringing. If you can imagine comparing to our upbringing and even the upbringing of our grihasthas today, there's this notion that we should wait until a child is, I don't know how old, before we start really teaching them Krishna consciousness. But the example is given here that actually it's right from the moment of conception, the child can be and should be cultivated with Krishna Katha. There's a famous story when Bhaktisiddhanta was a small boy, perhaps 2 or 3 years old, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some ripe mangoes from the market. Bimala Prasad took one to eat, saying, "This is mine." Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur got up and said in a grave voice, "What is this? New fruit has come into the house. It has not been offered to Giridhari, and you have taken it first? Remember, new fruit is to be given first to the Lord." Without giving, hold on, I keep getting this message, the first share to the Lord, nothing is to be taken. The child was very repentant and exclaimed, "Oh, what evil thoughts I have had. Throughout my whole life, I shall not eat these again. This is the right punishment for one ruled by greed." He made a promise and observed it throughout his whole life. In comments, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami, he comments on this incident. "Whenever we offered him mango," referring to Bhakti Siddhanta, "he said, 'No, I am an offender. I cannot take mango.' He was thinking that I have offended Krishna in my childhood by taking the mango of the deity. So this is the characteristic of the Acharya. They teach by their life's actions. One should be so much determined. A child took the mango. There is no offense. But he took that as a, he took a vow." Regarding Bhaktisiddhanta's education, when he was 7 years old, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was constructing the Bhakti Bhavan in Calcutta at Rama Bhagana. During that construction, a deity of Lord Kurma was unearthed. They were digging the foundation for this building, and suddenly a little deity of Lord Kurma was unearthed as they dug. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ordered Bhakti Siddhanta at the age of 7 to begin regulated worship of that deity. So we can see from his example, a 7-year-old may not be too young to start such worship. From the very beginning, the boy used to hear the preaching of his father with rapt attention. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as well as his audience, were amazed to see how a small boy could hear the topics of Krishna consciousness with such absorption. By the age of 7, he had committed the entire Bhagavad Gita to memory and could wonderfully explain the verses as well. Today in India, we have, I've seen this in Mayapur and other places in our Indian temples, they have these contests, and they invite kids from this age or younger to recite Bhagavad Gita. And there, I just saw on ISKCON News, there's a Muslim boy who actually won the contest. So young minds have very good memories, and this is a good time to commit the Bhagavad Gita to memory. He also was trained at publishing and proofreading in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's printing press in connection with the spiritual journey Sajjana Toshna that he printed. And at the age of 11, Bimala Prasad toured the various places of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leelas with his father. So he was very closely in connection with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was like his shadow. And just like any other occupation in India where the father and son are doing the same thing, the son, if the father is a cloth merchant, he works in the cloth shop. And by the time he gets to be old enough to run the shop and the father retires, then he's learned it. Same thing I saw in grain shops. The little boy from the time, practically he's a toddler, he's sitting in that shop. Same thing at the vegetable market. The kids are part of it, and they learn just by associating and watching their parents model how to do the occupation. In my reading here, Bhaktivedanta also apparently wrote a autobiography of himself when he was 9 years old, which has been referred to as writings, but apparently that version has been completely lost, and I suspect with the aging and the heat and the dust, things get decomposed and lost in India. It's not very easy to keep things, preserve things. Bimala Prasad had what we call today a photographic memory. Whatever he would read one time, he could later recall with perfect clarity. He was trained in mathematics and astrology at the Ramapura school, and he achieved such astounding scholarship that he was eventually awarded the title Siddhanta Sarasvati by his tutors, Pandit Mahesh Chandra Chauramani and Pandit Sundar Lal. During this period, he used to attend the Sunday weekly meetings of Thakur Bhaktivinod Vishva Vaishnava Raja Sabha and hear the Thakur lecture on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Sri Rupa Goswami. He was never known to study his school assignments. And while sitting at home, when he was supposed to be doing homework, he would replace those assignments with studies of Srila Narottam Das Thakur's Prarthana, Prema Bhakti Chandrika, and other devotional literatures. However, even though he wasn't studying any of his homework, whatever questions he was asked by his teachers, he would immediately know the answer. And he got excellent results on all his examinations. That's not true for most of our kids today. Such an incredibly high standard of learning for a young person. We can compare Bhaktisiddhanta's early life to what the interest of a boy today. We can hardly get a boy to sit down and study Krishna consciousness, what to speak of even karmi, anything. They're just so busy wanting to be on their computers and cell phones and playing basketball and doing all kinds of things but studying. Bhaktisiddhanta used to debate everyone he met on all sorts of subjects. No one who argued with him was ever able to defeat him, just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had defeated a great scholar, Keshava Kashmiri, at a young age. So also Bimala Prasad once, during his later college days, debated a scholar named Panchana Sahityacharya, the disciple of Vasudeva Shastri, a very famous professor of that time on topics of astrological calculation. The debate was held in the home of Sri Rajendra Chandra Shastri and judged by him as well. After some discussion, that scholar had to accept defeat. In fact, the scholar became so mortified that he passed stool and urine on himself out of fear and out of humiliation. Just imagine the shame. After that, everyone was reluctant to debate with Bhaktisiddhanta out of fear of such defeat. And he's under 11 at this stage. At the age of 11, while in the fifth class, Bimala Prasad invented a type of shorthand writing called Bikanto. And it was during this period that he took a tour of the holy places with his father. When he was in seventh class, which is like our today's eighth class, so he was in middle school, and about 13 years old, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought tulsi beads for his son from Jagannath Puri and gave him the name of Hari and a Nrisimha mantra to chant, which he executed very faithfully along with the worship of his Kurma deity, according to the instructions of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. At the age of 16, while his schooling continued, the books of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur formed the serious content of his studies. So he really becomes a disciple of his father, although it's not appropriate to give formal initiation or take it from your father. He, in fact, became his Shiksha Guru. He also began writing books at the age of 16 on astrology, and during this time he formed the Shira Kumara Sabha, or the August Assembly, amongst his friends whom he met regularly with at Calcutta Biandan Square. They used to sit together at 16 and discuss topics related to religion, and the members were required to take a vow of celibacy at 16. Just imagine proposing that to our 16 years old. Yes, you can come and hang out, but you have to vow to practice celibacy and sit and talk for several hours about Krishna. This society was formed. He formed it actually to give people a chance to seriously engage in worship of the Lord and to become detached from family life. Bimala Prasad was the only one who actually observed this vow immaculately, as one would expect. So different from our 16-year-olds, he created a club, and sadly, they couldn't follow the vows. Kind of understandably. I mean, he's so beyond us, it's just unimaginable that a 16-year-old would be that focused. In 1892, at the age of 18, he took an entrance examination and entered Calcutta's Sanskrit school. And as before, he paid little or no attention to the prescribed books, but he found the time to read all the philosophical books contained in the library. So he wasn't studying the homework, But he went to the library and just gobbled up knowledge from that philosophical library. So he not only knew Vaishnava philosophy and theology, he also knew all other different philosophies that were being offered and available. During his college holidays, he would discuss the Vedas with the scholar Sri Yukta Pritvidhara Sharma. Although Siddhanta Saraswati had become learned in all six branches of knowledge, which are Shiksha, pronunciation, Kalpa, sequences of Vedic scripture, Vyakarana, grammar, especially the use of word roots and words, Chanda, recitation of Vedic mantras, and Jyotish, astrological and astronomical calculation, still, to study the Vyakarana, the grammatical branches of the Vedas, he approached the Pandit Pritvidhara Sharma. The Pandit praised him for his achievements and encouraged him to study the Siddhanta Kalmudi throughout his life. Siddhanta Saraswati replied, "My life is for the single-minded cultivation of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya, not the cultivation of grammar. I have only studied the Vedas, the branches of the Vedas, and their related parts in a secondary manner." And, you know, from all that study, we see in the biography of Bhaktisiddhanta that he was so erudite. His word, his vocabulary was so textbook. It was so exalted that most of the people in his audience had no idea what he was talking about. He was just so beyond them. In fact, at a certain point, if you read his biography, you'll see that he actually realized that he was looking at people who could not comprehend his vocabulary, and he would apologize before speaking that, "I know you probably won't understand half of what I'm saying." And he delegated writing of articles to some of his disciples who could speak the philosophy in more plain English. He just had, his brain was just so full of such high theories that people couldn't grasp it. In 1895, he left college as he was very eager to execute his worship of the Lord and to remain free from the pressure to enter family life. He stated in his autobiography, "If I remain studying with careful attention at the college, then extreme pressure will be brought upon me to enter family life. But if I am considered to be foolish and inefficient, then no one will put such an inducement upon me for becoming so engaged. By this consideration, I left the Sanskrit college, and in order to maintain my life for the service of Hari, I was desirous of getting an honest occupation which I could perform with the intention of earning a humble income." This is an important instruction for those who are desirous to reduce their material attachments in order to have time to perform devotional service. As described here, Bhaktisiddhanta had the intelligence to realize that if he appeared to be materially successful in life, he would be harassed by social pressure to become married and then pursue an occupation that would pay well enough to support his family nicely. And then he would be entangled in being obliged to engage himself in describing the name, form, and qualities of everything other than Krishna. I remember when I was preaching in India with my husband and a group of brahmacharis in the Himalayas, I met an Indian woman who was the principal of a Himalayan village school, which is very unusual in India to see women taking such a position. And I asked her, you know, "How is it that you didn't get married and didn't have children and you have learned to read?" Because most women I met in Indian villages didn't know how to read or write. And her father had been the principal of the school before that, and she taught all of his sons how to read and write and didn't teach her or any of the daughters how to read and write. And she noticed, you know, as she looked around her at the other women, she noticed, well, they were all day busy in doing things like beating the clothes, no washing machine, no dryer, in Himalaya, very cold, freezing cold water, very hard to dry clothes. So all day, I saw this myself, beating the clothes on a rock, you know, hanging them up somewhere, going miles for wood that you could use for cooking, then cleaning the rice. In India, it's not clean. You have to clean all the bugs and the dust and rocks out of it first, you know, cooking, clean. I mean, the whole day is busy. There's no time for sitting and reading anything or chanting. And she realized as she looked around her, smart woman, she looked around and she said, "Gosh, you know, she had just learned how to chant the Ram Nam, because in northern India and up in the Himalayas, people are very much attracted to the Lord Ramachandra pastimes, and they chant Ram Nam. She had learned this, and she had so much relish for chanting the names of Ram that she decided, if I go that path and get married, I'm going to have to get busy like these other women. There will be no time to chant Ram Nam. And she begged her father to teach her to read and write, and the rest of her life was dedicated to educating the village women and community members and teaching in the school. So I give that example because Bhakti Siddhanta also could see that, and you need to really think before you make choices in life, because one little choice like that can lead to another choice and another choice and another choice till you find, I have no more time that I can chant Hare Krishna and read Prabhupada's books. So during his student days, Bhaktisiddhanta also wrote essays on spiritual topics of various magazines and strongly condemned various religious malpractices which had become prominent in society. At the Bhakti Bhavan in 1997, he established a small academy where learned persons came from Calcutta and attended his lectures and discourses. He was well acquainted with both Eastern and Western branches of astrology, but he naturally favored the Vedic one. And he was then offered the chair in astronomy at the University of Calcutta. He declined it. He said, no, thank you. I don't want to have more leadership or more, because with leadership comes more responsibility and, again, less time for hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. Let's see. I'm aware it's like almost quarter past. I want to talk about his initiation. Bhaktisiddhanta had been engaged in regularly chanting the Maha Mantra, and a Nrisimha Mantra had been given to him to chant when he was in the seventh class, middle school. And he had been worshipping the Kurma deity without fail. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur personally trained him how to use a printing press. And he was a very qualified candidate to become a disciple of a guru. But there are many pseudo-gurus, which are otherwise known as mantra peddlers, of the Sahajiya category. And they all wanted to have him as a disciple to increase their prestige. He was a magistrate's son. He was a strict renunciate. And he was learned and deeply attached to the scriptures. But he was not interested in a pretender guru. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had constructed his residence at Navadvip Dham, and which was the birth site of at Godrumadvip, which was the birth site of Lord Chaitanya. And Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji arrived one day in Navadvip to see the site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace and to hear the discourses of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And when he arrived, he was singing in ecstasy. His only possessions were the Tulsi Mala, which he wore around his neck, and another set he kept in his hand for counting. He only kept a few books, such as Narottam Das Thakur's books. So he had been performing there, bhajan, for many years in Vrindavan, and he was extremely renowned and was the disciple of Bhagavat Das Babaji, the disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji. But it was widely known that he was a paramahamsa of the highest caliber. So at the time of his arrival, he was wearing a cap made of tiger skin and was carrying a basket of various items and materials for his service. And he spotted Bhaktisiddhanta there in the audience, and he offered him four or five pieces of knotted rope for chanting his rounds, a tilak stamp with the initials for Hare Krishna, the tiger skin cap, and paraphernalia for worship. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj had received the basket and cap from his spiritual master, Bhagavat Das Babaji. Siddhanta Saraswati was very attracted to Gaurakishore Das Babaji's lotus feet at first sight, and he comments, I have been busy within this material world trying to bring sense gratification within the grasp of my hand. I have often thought that by obtaining the objects of sense gratification, all my shortcomings will be fulfilled. I often attained different facets that were indeed very rare, but my own personal shortcomings were never mitigated. In this material world, I have had the association of a very high-class aristocratic persons. However, seeing their various deficiencies, I could not offer them praise. The most merciful Supreme Lord, Sri Gaurasundara, seeing me in such a lamentable condition at such a time of adversity, gave permission to his dearmost devotees, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, to grant their blessings to me. Because I was always intoxicated with a worldly false ego, wanting again and again self-appraisal, I deprived myself of my own real benefit. But because of the influence of my previous birth's activities in devotional service, I came into the association of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was the form of my spiritual well-wisher. So at Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's urgings, Bhaktisiddhanta approached Sri Gaurakishore Das Babaji for initiation in the month of Magh of the year 1900. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji expressed reluctance to accept him, knowing Siddhanta Saraswati to be a great scholar. Finally, when Siddhanta Saraswati pleaded with him to accept him as a disciple, Babaji replied, "Well, Mahaprabhu will be asked, so I'm going to ask Mahaprabhu, and if he gives permission, your desire will be fulfilled." So Bhaktisiddhanta, he went away feeling dejected because he didn't get this permission. On another day, Bhaktisiddhanta, he approaches him again and he asks, "Well, what did Mahaprabhu order?" And Gaurakishore Das Babaji replied, "Well, I forgot to ask." So again, Bhaktisiddhanta went away very dejected. And the third time Babaji Maharaj was requested, he replied, "Well, I asked. I did not receive the command of Mahaprabhu." Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati then stood up, his heart breaking, and said, "You, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Gaurakishore Das Babaji, are both worshippers of Krishna, the crest jewel of devotees. Therefore, will you take mercy on someone dedicated to ordinary morality like me? Why will he give command? Why would anybody accept me? I'm such a rascal. Why would? Of course you don't accept me as a disciple." And then he said, I will just go, might as well kill myself since you will not accept me as your disciple. And he started to cry in front of Gaurakishore Das Babaji because he wouldn't accept him as his spiritual master. And Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji's heart became so melted to see this that he told him to go to bathe in the Saraswati River and then come back to him. And at the time of initiation, he gave him the name Siddhanta Saraswati, Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayatayadas. So that's a very special. I don't think Gaurakishore Das Babaji took any other disciples. Okay, what time is it now?
10 minutes.
Okay, 10 minutes. Okay, I'm gonna move here because I think this is also a sweet thing to share a couple stories from this book. Particularly the relationship between Bhaktisiddhanta's disciple relationships. Anyway, it's not hooked up. Let's see if I can. So, although Bhaktisiddhanta was exceedingly ferocious, the lion is very kind to his cubs. Similarly, although very ferocious to non-devotees like Hiranyakasipu, Lord Nrisimhadeva is exceedingly soft and kind to devotees. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati often seemed unapproachable to persons who saw only his stern exterior. Even most of his disciples were so much awed by his stature and uncompromising spirit that they considered themselves unworthy of and even feared coming very close to him. Particularly as the movement expanded, newer shishyas or disciples had very little or no opportunity to personally interrelate or speak with him, nor was it expected that they directly approach him. Gradually, he dealt only with an inner coterie of senior disciples who oversaw the activities of the mission. Yet junior devotees did not feel deprived of his affection or mercy, for they appreciated his leading disciples as channels of, not barriers to, his magnanimity. And indeed, the heart of the lion guru was exceedingly tender, as demonstrated in his genuine affection and sympathy for his disciples. Srila Saraswati Thakur regularly assured his shishya disciples that simply by adhering to his instructions, every one of them could attain Vaikuntha in his life. One can attain perfection in one's lifetime by giving up independence, being surrendered, and sincerely worshiping the Lord under the Guru's guidance. By constantly pointing his disciples toward their ultimate benefit, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati tried his best to keep them steadily progressing towards perfection. As he once told Srimat Parvata Maharaj, he noted the inclination and aptitude of individual devotees and accordingly recommended that they undertake particular kinds of service. Wanting that their seva not be unnecessarily hampered, Srila Saraswati Thakur was concerned with his disciples' physical needs. Often he would ask them whether they had taken Mahaprasad. Sometime shortly after the Mata Vasis, that's what they call, Mata is another name for ashram, and Vasis are residents, retired at night, he would check to see if they were sleeping under mosquito nets, and if not, he would personally hang nets so they could sleep soundly and avoid contracting malaria. If in winter he saw a disciple without warm clothing, he would ask the managers to provide some or directly give some of his own. When sending disciples to England, he had distinguished-looking long coats made for them to protect them from cold. When the managers at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to send home an inmate stricken with tuberculosis, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati proposed that his own quarters be accorded to the afflicted devotee. After that, the managers constructed a new building specifically for sick Matavasis. I think that's very interesting how concerned he was for the physical well-being and health of his devotees. Srila Saraswati Thakur's general habit was to indicate a desire rather than command a disciple to fulfill it. For example, often with his magazine editing staff, he would discuss in detail philosophical points and rebuttals of opposing theories. And while it was understood that he was outlining a draft for an article, he was more likely to say, "It would be good if something were written," than to order it done. So he would just make a suggestion and trust the disciples would pick it up. His intimate disciples were familiar with these gestures and would act accordingly without having to be told what to do. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati became perturbed when errant disciples left the mission and lapsed into their former ways. In some cases, he sent other devotees to try to reclaim their associate. He became so heartbroken upon hearing of the apostasy of a sannyasi disciple that he began to cry, appealing to Mahaprabhu, "Why did you give me the inspiration to award that soul sannyas if you were not prepared to protect him from maya? I have no power. I am helpless. I resign. I will no longer do this service." Although deeply disappointed, after some time he adjusted his feelings and again resolved to continue the preaching tussle. And I guess we have time for a couple more. Once Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati traveled with an entourage to install deities at a new mat. Although pleased with the construction and preparations for the festival, he noted the absence of one brahmachari disciple who had been residing there and inquired about him. The devotees related that the brahmachari had been misbehaving with a neighboring woman, and one night, after being severely reviled by his senior godbrothers, had decamped with all his belongings. They were sorry that he was gone, but being busy with preparations for the temple opening, had no time to search for him. Srila Saraswati Thakur sorrowfully commented, "It is difficult to bring a person from the torpor of maya into the realm of devotion. After eons of floundering in the waves of worldly distress, a rare, fortunate soul might at last approach the shore. To again push him back into the ocean is most heinous. A jiva came to us, yet somehow we have sent him back to suffer. That one soul means more to me than all these buildings and other arrangements you have made." On hearing this, his disciples also became remorseful. Suddenly, Hayagriva Prabhu said, "I know where to look for him." One day a devotee's watch broke and he immediately repaired it. He must be working in a watch shop. That's a pretty smart detective work. The devotees then scoured the city and finally found their absconding godbrother repairing watches in the back room of a shop. He began crying and said, "Krishna has answered my prayer. I have been miserable since I left the mat, but was too embarrassed to return. I have been praying to Krishna day and night that by any means he again bring him to me." The devotees responded, "Yes, you will have to come back because Guru Maharaj is greatly missing you. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was delighted to see his lost disciple who became overwhelmed by the compassion of his inconceivable merciful master. I'll stop here. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj Ki Jai.